Hi again, and welcome to In the Studio. Redbeard here with the stories behind history's greatest rock albums.
You're welcome. Guitar up. 1, 2, 3.
Today, In the Studio, one of the world's biggest selling bands of the last quarter century, decides to dig down to its roots.
It wasn't like going to school, but it was like having a lesson that you want, like, you know, whether it be to go hang gliding or play golf, where you're going to benefit from it in the long run, and it's fun to do. We all stepped in to somebody else's shoes to do certain things that were maybe not the way that we'd have done them if left to our own devices. But when we wanted to copy them, or we wanted to celebrate the song in the style that it was meant to be done, you have to do things in a slightly different style to your own. And that's just a learning curve. And that's all of us come out of this knowing more about music than we did when we went in to do it. Hi, I'm Joe Elliott.
And I'm Phil Collum. We're from Def Leppard.
And we are in the studio with an album of hand-picked favourites.
Yeah! Rock
on! After more than 25 years and a dozen albums, the band Def Leppard has few goals yet to accomplish. Originally from Sheffield, England's working-class steel factory neighborhoods, they banded together as mere teenagers, released their first album, and toured America for the first time in 1980. Their third album, 1983's Pyromania, exploded and eventually sold over 10 million copies. Several tragedies ensued, including drummer Rick Allen's loss of an arm in a car crash and guitarist Steve Clark's overdose death. But their 1987 Hysteria album sold even more than Pyromania. All told, Def Leppard has sold over 65 million albums worldwide. That's amazing. So for this, their 12th studio effort, Def Leppard felt the time was right to do something that lead singer Joe Elliott has been talking about ever since I first met him in 1980, an all-covers album of their favorite classics. There is at least one historical precedent for it from one of their heroes, David Bowie, who threw the entire rock world a curve back in 1973 when Bowie released an album of all covers called Pinups at the height of his Ziggy Stardust period. Def Leppard lead singer Joe Elliott outlines the personnel on the Yeah album after lead guitarist Phil Collum explains Def Leppard's philosophy behind it. In the studio.
It's not just doing a covers album. We actually wanted it to sound like Def Leppard songs. And because these songs were very special to us, it wasn't like going, well, let's do a covers album, the angle being it'll get played a lot, because that's what, you know, that's what we want. We actually wanted to do our thing, where we're from, the whole roots of it, when music was very special to us, you know, when we actually got into music. And that's what all these songs were, well, the bands especially. The songs was a different story, you know, it... With all of us, it was like, it didn't really matter if it was what Bowie song it was, as long as it wasn't the most popular one. That's what we tried to avoid.
And musician-wise, obviously Phil and Vivian play all the guitars on everything. Sav plays bass, Rick drums. I sang all of them except for Stay With Me, which Phil sang. And we had a couple of guests. We had Vivian's brother, John, played saxophone on 4 songs. M. Griner, a friend of ours, played piano on Golden Age of Rock and Roll, and it's the Master of Ceremonies at the beginning of that song is actually Ian Hunter from Mott the Hoople, yeah, who didn't get to do it on the original. The original was the A&R man from Columbia in 74. I can't remember who it was then. Yeah.
Was it?
Loggins.
I thought it was Buffin who done that.
No, it's Dan Loggins.
Wow. That's who it was. There you go, I didn't know that. So he finally gets to do it on his own song, but or not on his version. So it was a lot of fun. You know, we finished it. We've had it in the can for a while. And, you know, it's obviously just been mixed and remastered and stuff like that. But we've kind of been sitting on it. And it's, yeah, you know, as you know, Joe's been wanting to do this forever.
Since Pinups came out in 73, before I was even in a band.
Actually, before I was in the band, Joe said, you know, Pinups, wouldn't that be great to do a rock version of Pinups? We'll be right back.
Originally done in 1976 by the late, great Mark Bolan and T-Rex, that's 20th Century Boy, done by Def Leppard on the album Yeah, in stores and online now. So how did they develop a short list from the dozens of songs that each of the five band members undoubtedly had? Here's one of the two Def Leppard lead guitarists, Phil Collin.
For example, T-Rex, everyone goes, Get It On. It's actually my favourite T-Rex song as well, but it's been done in a power station, done it. Everyone knows it. But we wanted to get something that still had that vibe, still spoke the same kind of language, was still a great rock track, but just hadn't been done to death. I mean, actually, since we've recorded this, I've heard 20th Century Boy, a couple of versions on commercials and everything, but just stuff like that, really. It was like, let's not do the obvious. When we done the Kink song, you know, we you can't do You Really Got Me. You can't do All Day and All of the Night. And it's like, well, what would work? And, you know, we went around the houses, Waterloo Sunset. We thought, well, we could do a really good Def Leppard version. It actually sounds like a Def Leppard song. That's the other great thing about it. So the thought went into stuff like that, really. It was, it kind of sounds like one of our songs, but it's not. You know, it's someone else's stuff. You know, the Kinks had some great songs, and as did T-Rex, all of these bands, you know, and it was just a matter of whittling it down and getting something so we're not all having a fight about it. And to be quite honest, most of the stuff, we were like, yeah, that works great, but, you know, we had to discuss it and all that stuff, really.
Jump up and down in my blue suede shoes. Hey, did you rock and roll? Rock on. And where do we go from here? Which is the way?
What a killer version of Rock On from Def Leppard on the album Yeah. Def Leppard did a show-stopping version on last fall's tour. Choosing a one-song wonder like Rock On is an example of what Def Leppard is trying to convey on the album Yeah, according to first guitarist Phil Collin and then lead singer Joe Elliott.
Yeah, we didn't want to do a Beatles and Stones thing. You know, everyone goes, oh, I'm going to do a covers album and this. I've always wanted to do this song. It's like, it was not about I've always wanted to do this song. It's about representing the band and where we come from. Like, Thin Lizzy was a huge influence on Def Leppard, you know, the two guitar thing. Queen was, but, you know, again, we didn't want to go there because it had been done so much. So that was the only reason we kind of left that off. I mean, we'd done Rock On a la Queen, you know, it kind of, there's a whole bit in the middle that kind of sounds this completely lifted off of Brian's guitar playing, Brian May, and that was the little tribute there. So it's all little things like this, really, but it was, we wanted to sound like Def Leppard, but we really wanted people to know where we come from.
The only real kind of limitations we put on ourselves were that we did say every song should come from before we signed our deal, so that they were pre-Leppard. That in, just to make it more obvious that these were the songs that influenced who we are and were at least partly responsible for the kind of sound that we make when we write our own songs.
You'd think after a quarter century of selling more than 65 million albums worldwide, people would finally get a handle on who Def Leppard is. But Joe Elliott says this album, yeah, needed to be made.
I just think it's a really cool thing to actually finally be able to nail our true colours to the mass. You know, many a time we do press and people say, well, you know, you're a heavy metal band, and one of us will probably sit there and go, actually, no, not really, we're not. And we go, what do you mean? So, well, we're a rock band, and there's a big difference. We grew up on a lot of British pop music that never even infiltrated the American psyche, you know. And it was, no matter how many times you say it in the press, the next round of press you do for the follow-up album, they instantly put you back in this other bag. And I kind of figured, well, if they're going to ignore the print, then maybe they will not ignore the record. Where it's you know, we're definitely been doing Roxy music and Blondie and Mott and Bowie and T-Rex and David Essex. It might just wake a few people up and shake a few people up, and they'll go, ah, okay, I get it now. Because it gets a bit tiresome forever having to, you know, declare what kind of music you are, and people either don't believe you or just ignore what you say. So this is, you know, these songs, as much as we dearly love bands like Zeppelin and Purple and, you know, some of the heavier, what you might call album track bands. But I think when we first started listening to radio, it was the British Top 40 on Radio 1 and Radio Luxembourg, who were a little bit more adventurous with their playlist. But essentially still, it was the 7-inch vinyl was their main, you know, their main playlist. And they're the kind of songs that obviously we got to listen to a lot. And we were fortunate that the British music scene between about 70, 71 and 74, a lot of the bands like Slade and Sweet and Bowie and T-Rex, it was very guitar-based 3-minute pop songs, which by today's standards may well be called hard rock. Even when you think of a really kind of trite band like Mudd, Tiger Feet could have been Motley Crue by today's standards, because it was just big drums and guitars and, you know, big hooky choruses, some of them cheesy, some of them not. But, you know, you have to kind of weed through the dross, and a lot of the Slade singles were top-notch. You know, I mean, obviously, we didn't do things like Mama, We're All Crazy Now or Come and Feel the Noise, because Quiet Riot have been there and done that.
Yeah.
originally by one of my all-time favorite bands, Roxy Music, in 1973. That's Street Life by Def Leppard on their album, Yeah. Rick Allen's drumming is particularly impressive on that song. Next, Phil Collin and Joe Elliott each share which one of the 14 songs they now have a new appreciation for. And Joe Elliott reveals who his all-time musical idol is. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Def Leppard for the new classic rock tribute album, Yeah.
Hi, I'm Joe Elliott.
And I'm Phil Collin. We're from Def Leppard.
And we are in the studio with an album of hand-picked favourites.
Yeah!
And I'm Redbeard. Doing this tribute album may have had the luxury of letting Def Leppard off the hook in the writing and composing department this time around, but for lead singer Joe Elliott in particular, he had the daunting task of trying to match more than a dozen vocal performances permanently etched in rock history, many of which by Joe Elliott's personal heroes.
I'm very fortunate that I've just been given the opportunity to sing 14 different ways, and I think most of them worked. You know, two great examples for me of how I was not expecting it to turn out was doing Little Bit of Love by Free. I mean, me doing Paul Rodgers, you'd think would be like a mountain to climb, or I would have thought that. But for some reason,
I stepped up to the plate
and did it. He never sang high, so in that respect, it was relatively easy to sing. But then you've still got to put the right emphasis on certain parts of it, and it still has to have the right character and emotion. And it came out way quicker and way better than I initially thought it would. I thought it'd take a lot more work than it did. And then when we started doing Golden Age of Rock and Roll by Mott the Hoople, featuring Ian Hunter, who was my all-time idol, I couldn't do it. We got the track down, and the guys were upstairs watching soccer or something. I said, we got to go and do this in a different key. We got to cut it again. It was too high for me to sing, and you wouldn't really think that Ian sings in a really high register. The timbre of his voice doesn't make it appear like he's singing high, but I could not sing it in the key that Mott did it in. We dropped it down to a more favourable key for me, and even then I was like, I don't know if this is working, and I couldn't figure out for the life of me, if it was just my being so aware of the fact that it was a Mott the Hoople song and that I was going to do it justice. Whereas when we did the Free one, I wasn't thinking that hard. So I had to step back and go, let it go, you know, just let it go. And then when I finally did it, it worked out fine. But I went through a little bit of mental torture, which I put myself through on the Mott song, purely because it was Mott. When a lot of the other ones, I just went in and did, and we didn't spend a great deal of time. None of us did, whether it be the guitars or the bass or the vocals. I remember the one night I did the Roxy Music song. We did it straight after dinner, started about 8 at night, and I was finished by 8:45, having done 7 or 8 takes of it. And then within 15 minutes, it was like, okay, who do you want to be now? And I jumped from being Brian Ferry to Debbie Harry. Yeah, and I literally, within 15 minutes, went from being Brian Ferry to Debbie Harry. And, you know, it was a very comical yet schizophrenic way of working. But I enjoyed every second of it, really. I can do Debbie Harry real well.
He insisted on dressing for the part each year. Yeah. Looks great. He's wearing it now, right, actually.
Ladies and gentlemen, the golden age of rock and roll.
Dreams.
Boy, that is a great version of Mott the Hoople's Golden Age of Rock and Roll done by Def Leppard on the album Yeah. I was curious the method they used to decide how to approach each song, whether to arrange and play it straight up like they did on Golden Age of Rock and Roll there, or 20th Century Boy, which we heard earlier, or rework it and put their own stamp on it like they did with Rock On. Guitarist Phil Collin answers first, then Def Leppard singer Joe Elliott.
That was really easy. Some songs deserved a karaoke-type version, you know.
Forgeries, that's what I've been calling them.
Yeah, so, you know, like Driving Saturday, we tried to do it exactly the same. We didn't with, like, the David Essex song because we didn't want it to sound like that. You know, we liked the song, but we're not going to do all this silly orchestra stuff in there. It's just we want it to be a Def Leppard record, you know, with guitars and guitar orchestration and stuff like that. So we just, that particular one, we changed. So it was really horses for courses. Some songs deserved a complete makeover and other songs we felt had to be done the way that they were originally intended. So it was good fun, you know.
And it was a case of if it's not broken, it doesn't need fixing, you know. I mean, it was a great opportunity for us to do something that we'd really enjoy doing without the pressure of normal studio situations of, you know, rewriting songs, struggling and going through all the usual artistic rubbish of is it good enough, is it up to scratch. With these songs, you listen to them, you start playing them, you can't say you want to rewrite the second verse because that's just morally the wrong thing to be thinking, you know. You take it for what it is. I think we've probably learned a big lesson from that as well, because we used to sometimes agonise over every single inch of tape and every single second of every song that we wrote. And sometimes you realise after the event that it actually wasn't worth it, because you take something away by trying too hard. With these songs, we just went in and did them because that's what they were. And I guess it's like some preacher reading out the Bible. You can't change it to suit your own situation. You have to pick something that fits your sermon for the day or whatever, but you can't change the words because it's the Bible. And a lot of these songs, it was a similar kind of thing. The only two that we really made a big change on were Rock On and Waterloo Sunset.
Yeah.
And Waterloo sounds like Def Leppard. We love Waterloo Sunset, don't get me wrong, but it's because it's from 67, it has a sort of charm about it that's a little dated by today's standards, so all we needed to do was just kind of leopardize it a little bit more.
People swarming like flies round Waterloo.
Mary and Julie cross over the river where they feel safe and sound. And they
Def Leppard doing the Kinks' Waterloo Sunset from the Def Leppard album, Yeah. I asked both Phil Collin and Joe Elliott of Def Leppard which song, after studying it, arranging and recording it for the Yeah album, gave them a new appreciation for it. Phil Collin goes first.
That's an interesting question, because a lot of the time we just took it for granted they were great for whatever they were, for whatever reasons. But while we were doing it, I'd say Waterloo Sunset for me, just from the chord progressions, what the song was about, the imagery of the lyric, and again, sometimes you've listened to something for years, sometimes you just take it for granted and it just disappears. But when you're actually in there, you're rearranging someone else's work, which is essentially what we did, made it our own. And with that song, you know, you're obviously listening to the lyrics and where it's going. That one to me kind of really stood out, the very strong kind of musical progressions with it. And I mean, blowing our own trumpet here, but especially our version, we kind of juiced it up a little bit. But just lyrically, where it went, the imagery of Ray Davies's, you know, words and stuff was fantastic. And when you actually do the song, it does become apparent. And yeah, it wasn't until we finished that I actually really got a better vibe from it than I actually did even when I was growing up.
It took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say exactly the same thing. Waterloo Sunset, I think, because even coming from Phil's from London. He knows Waterloo. He's been there. I've been there since, but and I actually went to Waterloo because of that song about 1980. I just wanted to say I'd been, the same way that you go to the Cavern if you go to Liverpool. I just wanted to try and get inside Ray Davies's head. When we did the song, for a small amount of time, I actually became Ray Davies. And I don't mean that in a funny way or a disrespectful way. I so wanted to feel the same way that he portrays it himself as a lyric. I wanted to feel the same way that Ray Davies did. It's impossible because I'm not Ray Davies and I'm not from London. But I did for a little while feel like, I suppose it's if you play a part on stage long enough, you can become the part for the amount of time you're on stage. You know, you have to be at one with what you're doing. And with these kind of songs, you have to get in the head of each artist to feel that you can step back outside and become yourself again. So you're kind of putting on a skin that belongs to somebody. It's almost like wearing a mask, you know. And by the time I'd sung it over and over again, I could shut my eyes and I was imagining every flagstone under my feet on the corner of Waterloo Bridge. I saw the video that we've never made. I saw it in my head. I saw what I was wearing as I was leaning on the wall, miming the words, in some cold, windy, miserable winter's day, which is what it would probably need to be, you know, and then cut into happy, bright Carnaby Street-type shots of girls in floppy hats and short skirts and high-heeled boots, and knee-high boots too. So, you know, that for me was the song that I really... It became part of what we are, you know. It was, and it wasn't that difficult either. It's just the obvious one. It happens to a lot of people. When you're making a record, you write, say, 10 new songs. One song just comes. There's no effort needed. It's just like rolling a snowball down a hill. It just gets bigger and builds its own momentum. And the other nine can be like pulling teeth. With Waterloo, it just came together so easily. It was the first one we worked on.
Yeah.
We had it down in sound checks and rehearsals while we were touring Europe.
It was in Russia, actually.
In Latvia. And we had it in 15, 20 minutes. We'd got our own arrangement of it. It just came together. And once I started singing it, I just say, like I say, for a little while, it's almost trance-like. You just aren't yourself anymore. You just you become what you think is Ray Davies. And it's a very strange place to be, but it's, I guess it's like kind of meditation. It's really what it is. You know?
Was originally done by the band Free, done now from the Def Leppard album Yeah. Still to come, Joe and Phil return with blistering Def Leppard versions of two songs by bands heretofore considered sacred. I'm Redbeard in the studio with Def Leppard's Yeah.
Hi, I'm Joe Elliott.
And I'm Phil Cullen. We're from Def Leppard.
And we are in the studio with our new album of hand-picked favorites. Yeah.
And I'm Redbeard. I've interviewed all of the current members of Def Leppard many times since their very first trip to America in 1980. But as I listen to lead guitarist Phil Collin and singer Joe Elliott talk about this album, Yeah, featuring the music that most influenced them to become musicians, I was impressed with how revitalized they both seemed. First, Phil Collin.
Because we learned a lot from this record. That's the surprising thing, you know, as jaded as we all are about the music industry and songs and artists and everything. We really learned a lot from doing this record and got really excited about ourselves, the band, everything musical. Just it was a really weird situation, actually, a bizarre experience. But yeah, great.
And I think that mostly came from the fact that we were thinking about nothing except the primary reason we do this, which is the songs. We didn't think about business.
Right.
We didn't think about studio costs or writing and making sure that it represents where we are right now, because
the single.
Yeah. Or, you know, which is going to be the lead-off single and have we got the right balance? We kind of had, we had it all in place before we even started recording. We just knew in our minds that we were doing the right thing. It just felt so right. Because the only focus we had was on the songs. And it's not that we'd lost that focus, but it is taken away from me when you're thrust into a situation where you have to do the follow-up record to whichever album you're following up. You go in there to sit down and start from scratch all the time. And we went in with a game plan and we knew what it was from day one. And I don't think we may never have as much insight and fun again making a record, because the songs won't be there unless we spent 2 years writing songs and then we went in and pretended that they were somebody else's. It's going to be hard to do.
That's an uncanny cover of Thin Lizzy's Don't Believe a Word by Def Leppard. Unbelievable, note perfect. And Joe Elliott doing a spot on resemblance to the late Thin Lizzy lead singer Phil Lynott, whose unmistakable voice I thought to be unmatchable until now. That's worth the price of the Def Leppard CD right there. Phil Collin and Joe Elliott explain how Def Leppard's decision to cover Thin Lizzy was also a tribute to one of their former fallen members.
Well, with Steve Clark was always a huge Thin Lizzy fan, and the band was a Lizzy. Everyone
very
liked
influenced.
Thin Lizzy. You know, the twin guitar thing. But so there's always been kicking around. Vivian is actually from Ireland, be it from Northern Ireland. So, you know, Thin Lizzy were the classic rock band from Southern Ireland. That was the big thing, you know. So we wanted to do a Lizzy song. And again, you know, we didn't want to do The Boys Are Back in Town. We didn't want to do Jailbreak. So it was just a matter of time till we selected one that kind of fit. So we done that one, and you know, Viv really wanted to play the solo. It was like one of his things, which is actually played by a Scotsman, Brian Robertson, ironically. But yeah, so that's really how that came. It was just, yeah, doing a Lizzy song, and that one kind of fit the bill. Nice and short and sweet and to the point.
Yeah, it's like 2 minutes and 11 seconds.
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, it's really is. Just a classic example of how you can do a great song in way less than 3 minutes, including the solo. You know,
so it was also a tribute to Steve as well, that one. It was kind of weird because, you know, actually before I even was in the band, I know Steve was like always into playing the Lizzy stuff.
Huge.
And finally, another rock untouchable is Rod Stewart and the Faces, pretty much universally considered, man for man, one of the greatest bands of all time. And their song Stay With Me, it's an icon that's never been attempted, lest you make a fool of yourself trying. That is, until now.
Well, the Black Crows could do it. They'd do a good version.
They'd do a relatively good version, but Chris Robinson wouldn't sound anything like you. See, I've heard Phil sing for years and years and years, and he sounds like Rod Stewart. He just does. So, you know, when we originally did this as a kind of a B-side about 1999, and obviously, as you can tell, Phil sings lead vocal on this one because he really does Rod Stewart well. I got to play Ian McLagan on this one. I got the Fender Rhodes, which was fun. I mean, this was really a great case of the individuality of the band all coming to the forefront. Phil gets to sing. I got to play the keyboard. Vivian got to be Ronnie Wood and do the slide guitar, which, in fairness, towards the end, when the song speeds up again, when he does one of the Ronnie licks, it is identical to the... It's exactly the same out of tune as Ronnie's was. You know, and Sav doing the Ronnie Lane bass, which was so alien to him, because when Sav did it, he said, I would never in a million years play bass like this. But at the end of it, by the time he'd done it, he says, you know, I learned so much by playing like this, because it's just unusual for him to play that way. So we've all come out of this. It was like, it wasn't like going to school, but it was like having a lesson that you want, like, you know, would it be to go hang gliding or play golf, where you're going to benefit from it in the long run. And it's fun. Phil's vocal on Stay With Me is just something else. I mean, I've played it to Ronnie Wood, and you're going to have to beep this bit, but Ronnie said, fucking hell, sounds more like me than I do. And I knew exactly what he meant when he said it, you know. I mean, it really was. It is that good, you know.
If there's smoke coming out of your speakers, all I can say is, yeah, Def Leppard's Vivian Campbell pulling out all the stops with the band going full tilt. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after I grab a fire extinguisher. This is Redbeard in the studio thanking Joe Elliott and Phil Collin. Special thanks this time to Michael Kobayashi of HK Management. In the studio was written this edition by Redbeard, transcription by Jane Carpenter, theme song by Andy Timmons.